Chapter 27. Natty was happy in nursing school and grateful to have good friends who believed in enjoying themselves after a long, hard day. She learned a lot and began to seriously consider whether she'd like to do private duty or work in a hospital after she graduated. She was particularly drawn to psychiatric nursing because of her sister. In their second year, the students were expected to work at a psychiatric hospital for 3 months. The mentally ill were no longer stuck in asylums. Some were even sent home to try to live semi-normal lives. Natty knew people, just like her sister, who were misdiagnosed or whose conditions were not well understood or were warehoused in institutions. But despite her worries, she learned from the staff nurses how to treat the patients humanely. She and the other students didn't just care for their patients, but gave them tasks to do that were supposed to make them feel useful. Natty found the experience intriguing, if not a little terrifying. She remembered a rotation on a locked psychiatric unit of mentally ill women. Some had tried to hurt themselves or others. Her assignment had been to take care of a young woman her age. Her patient had tried to kill someone, and then herself. She had a history of starting fires. The other students were assigned to other women of varying ages, but with similar problems. The previous week, Natty and the other students planned to bring a treat for the young women. Natty brought face powder. Other girls brought in lipstick, eyeshadow, mascara, and face cream. They decided to offer the makeup to the female patients. Perhaps wearing makeup might cheer them. Natty and the other students placed the cosmetics on a round table in the center of the day room, where patients could sit and relax and talk with one another. The students told their patients the makeup was there and to please feel free to use it. Gradually, the patients approached the table and began picking up the cosmetics. The students were thrilled when the patients became excited. They clustered together to congratulate themselves on a wonderful idea. After a few minutes, Natty turned around to see how her patient was doing. "They're eating the face cream," she had exclaimed. The other students followed her gaze. Other patients were eating the lipstick and powder. Natty felt she'd learned a couple of lessons that day. Don't leave your patient unattended, and good ideas sometimes fail. Some of the psychiatric patients also had physical illnesses. Some had been voluntarily admitted, but others had been committed by the court. As she worked with the patients, Natty thought of her sister, Abby, who had been in and out of psychiatric institutions that were not as progressive or forward-thinking as this one. Abby was being given treatments Rose rejected years before. Ira gave his permission for Abby to receive insulin shock therapy, an electric shock. He could only control her medicines when she was home. Natty was angry when she found out he had been hiding Abby's medicine. She echoed Rose's concerns, yelling at Ira that Abby needed those medicines. Ira lost the battle because Abby was often sedated and given other medicines in the hospital. It seemed her body grew used to them, requiring them to function. In 1952, Abby delivered her first of three children. She seemed to be trying hard to be a good mother. She doted on her children. Natty could see that mental illness and her increasing conflicts with Ira, who tried to keep her away from their mother and Laura, made it difficult for Abby to cope. Natty visited her at home and in the hospital. Natty now knew Abby's illness was not her fault. She recognized Mother's role in Abby's illness. She grieved for the life Abby might have had, one like her own, one she knew Abby could never get back. Natty tried to be supportive, to make up for all the time she couldn't understand her sister. She was no longer angry about being awakened almost every night of her childhood, or embarrassed if she was with Abby when she had an incident. She felt an obligation to Abby as her sister and as a nurse. In May 1952, Natty had finished 2 years of nursing school and Eddie was expected home. He hadn't written much. Natty received 3 letters during his entire 1 year tour of duty. He called twice. He wrote of his love and devotion, trying to hide the miseries of war from her. He and 2 buddies from his unit traveled to New York by way of Japan and Seattle. Eddie had suffered a lot in the war. He didn't tell Natty how the engraved cigarette lighter she had given him saved his life. Lying under a pile of dead soldiers, he'd been stabbed to make sure he was also dead. The lighter had taken the impact. He also didn't tell her he was the only one to survive an attack on the tank he commanded. The rest of his team was dead. When they reached New York, Eddie and his buddies were required to have physical and psychiatric examinations before being allowed to take leave. He passed the physical exam with flying colors, although he was thinner than when he'd left and so tired. He felt like sleeping for months. He had frostbite on his ankles, but the doctor said that was expected after standing for hours in the cold and wet. The psychiatrist was next, the only obstacle to taking leave, going home and seeing Natty. Dr. Hillman gave Eddie a battery of written tests and a Rorschach test, then settled in a chair across from him to talk. At the end of the two-hour assessment, Dr. Hillman pronounced his verdict. "Mr. Roth, I'm afraid you're suffering from battle fatigue. I think you and your friends will benefit from weekly psychotherapy. We can keep you here in the hospital for a few weeks and then reconsider your leave." Eddie looked at the doctor. Dr. Hillman looked back at Eddie. Eddie rose from his chair and calmly stepped out into the hall where his two friends waited. He silently beckoned to them. They followed him back into the doctor's office. "Doctor, would you please repeat what you just said so my friends can hear it?" asked Eddie, his tone rising with his anger. "No need to get upset. I want to help you. You've all been through a terrible ordeal. We can give you the care you need here. You can probably go home soon," replied the doctor cheerily. Eddie looked at his friends, and each nodded in response. Together, they picked up Dr. Hillman and carried him to the open window. They turned him upside down and dangled him by his heels. "Thanks, but no thanks, doctor. We're going home," declared Eddie. "Now, if you'll just sign the paperwork, we'll be on our way." Eddie and his friends left the hospital and the shaken doctor behind, happy to have escaped what they considered worse than a prison sentence. They couldn't understand the doctor. They were perfectly fine. They walked toward a bar down the street. The three friends sat down and ordered beers. The men, some of them veterans of the two previous wars, respectfully moved aside to give the soldiers room. A few of them reached out to shake the hands of the returning soldiers. Others patted them on the back. The old veterans could see in their eyes that they'd seen the elephant. The veterans recognized each other. They saw the anger, sorrow, and fear that would never completely leave them. Eddie noted the signs of homage to General MacArthur lining the walls behind the bar. He started to talk to his buddies about the general, expressing his hatred and disappointment in the man who took all the credit for the fighting done by the soldiers. Dugout Doug let his men fight and die in Korea, while he sat elsewhere comfortable and safe. The three men had lost good friends because of his bad decisions. One guy, sitting at a nearby table, overheard the discussion. He shouted to the all-male crowd, "Hey, these soldiers hate the general." The other men in the bar, both civilians and old veterans, looked up from their beers and their conversations. "What? That can't be. Why, he's the best general in the army." "What's your problem?" said the guy who'd raised the alarm. He was fat and ugly and red in the face from too much drink. Eddie nodded at his buddies, who took their cue, deposited some change on the bar, and exited the place without a word. They knew the men in the bar, like most of the public, had eaten up the news headlines, making it seem like MacArthur had won all the battles single-handedly. Most people would not see it any other way, no matter how much returning soldiers tried to explain. And right now, they were too tired to try. Eddie could feel the suppressed anger and disappointment he and his friend shared, marring their homecoming. He was tempted to take a swing at the fat guy. The best thing to do was leave. He and his friends parted ways, heading in different directions toward home. They promised to keep in touch. As Eddie resumed walking, he noticed people crossing the street to walk on the other side. "Maybe I am a little crazy," he thought. The temper he had as a teenager had been compounded by the stress of war. He had little patience for his mother, who didn't make a fuss about his return. But his older sister Miriam, her husband Ezra, a decorated World War II veteran, and his younger sister Edna were there in the old house waiting for him with hugs, handshakes, and pats on the back. Mac walked in a few minutes later, stopping on his way home from work. His mother had at least gone to the trouble of swinging another dead chicken around her head, plucking it clean and baking with potatoes and carrots. Eddie had enjoyed trying Japanese food as he'd waited for the ship home, but there was nothing like American home cooking, the food he'd dreamt about for a year. During dinner, the conversation was light. Eddie noticed Ma hadn't invited Natty to his homecoming. He knew from Natty's letters that she'd made an effort to ingratiate herself with his mother without success. After dinner, Mac and Ezra took him aside. The women left them alone and went into the kitchen to clean up. "Welcome home, Eddie," said Mac, as each man lit a cigarette and settled into a living room chair. "It's good to have you back in one piece." "How you doing, Eddie?" "Really?" asked Ezra, tall and handsome enough to be a movie star. "I'm okay. Thanks for asking. I just need some rest. But first, I need to see Natty. She must be getting impatient by now," responded Eddie, already rising from his chair. "I'm going to change out of this uniform and go see her, if you don't mind. Can we talk another time?" "Sure," said Mac, winking. "We understand, don't we, Ezra?" Mac gave Eddie a brotherly hug. "Listen, seriously though, Eddie," said Ezra, standing up and waving a cigarette in the air. "We know what it's like. We've been there. Anytime you want to talk, just say so." "Sure thing. Thanks."